Greetings and welcome to Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. This is a weekly podcast of Sunday homilies and theological reflections given by the staff of the Catholic community and their guests. Today's speaker is Father Nathan Kessel, OP Pastor, Director of the Catholic Community, and Megan O'Neill, a senior student of Stanford University. It is the second Sunday of Lent, and the readings are from Cycle C.
This story of transfiguration, it's called. It's happened in the life of Jesus and of those that were with him on that mountain. But for the rest of us, we're really invited to think of when were there, was there a moment or perhaps a few moments in our lives when someone said something, we experienced something, we met someone, something happened that left us forever different. Can you think of a moment or a few in your life where you were transfigured, transformed? Because my parents were born during the Depression, they sometimes went to bed without food. And later, growing up in the 60s, we heard about that once in a while. They were determined that we would always be well-fed, and we had two chest-type freezers full of beef and vegetables that we put up, gardens. They had Victory Gardens, and that kept going long after the war ended. There was always plenty of food, and they made sure that there was always plenty of money because they saved. They designed and built a home when they could afford to pay for the whole thing. I can remember going with my dad to buy cars, and he loved to kind of play with the sales guy on the car lot because there was always the presumption that you'd be financing part of the cost of a new car. So he'd let the guy talk about that kind of thing, and then he'd wink and say, "Watch this." And then he'd reach in his pocket and pull out a big wad of cash enough to buy a new car and start going through it and saying, "Okay, now tell me, what's the cash price? Here's my price." I knew that I was going to college in the first grade. The nun asked, "How many of you plan to go to college?" And my hand shot up because I would go to the bank with my dad. And I had my own little passbook savings book that was about this big, had my name on it. I had to look up at the lady, hand it to her, and always when we left the bank, the number was bigger than it was when we came in. There was going to be enough money for me to go to college. I remember giving away my car, which they had bought, when I entered the Dominicans. It was a year old. I got a good year's use out of that Volkswagen Rabbit. My sister enjoyed it for a number of years after that. I remember when Dad went into dementia, because there were five of us and he couldn't always remember which one was which, I would sometimes wear a clerical collar when I was home on vacation just to make it easier to identify myself as the one that was the priest. You know how maybe you've loved someone who moved into dementia, and you know they can remember a phrase or two, or there'll be a key idea that they keep returning to. For my dad, when he recognized that I was the son that was the priest, he would say, "How's the roof?" Because he remembered when I was a brand new young pastor at 33 years old in Riverside at the UC Riverside Newman Center. That community had just built a brand new facility, their first ever. They had been in a shopping mall before that and in classrooms earlier than that. But they had a brand new facility. but they owed $1.2 million on it. I had never been in charge of any kind of debt, and now I inherited a facility that was brand new, but not paid for. I remember writing that first check, the first mortgage payment on that building. It was $8,000, and $6,800 of it was interest. $1,800 of it went against the principal. And the roof leaked from the moment it was built. It had all kind of pointy things, and it had, you know, skylights. It did everything but keep rain out. And the different vendors, there were four different vendors that fought over whose fault it was that it leaked. And in the end, we had to pay $60,000 more to get it repaired out of pocket. That's why Dad remembered, "How's the roof?" Because my life was pretty different from his. I didn't have offspring of my own. I was living this vow of poverty and being a Dominican priest, but the thing that he could remember that we had in common was we both had the job of keeping a roof over our family. "How's the roof?" While I was at that assignment, there was a day, I told this story, a little bit of it, on Ash Wednesday, so if you were here at the 4:30, you might have heard this not very long ago. I was forced to go to this command performance thing on tithing and stewardship. They brought in a whiz-bang priest from the Midwest who was the guy about tithing and stewardship. They were taking names, so you couldn't get away with not coming. I was there. I remember being over the coffee and donuts before the thing started, and all the priests were in a foul mood.
"I wasn't ordained for this."
And I was in no better mood than anybody else. Anyway, the guy took the mic, and he addressed 230 priests in this big auditorium and said, "Men, hands up. How many of you love the people you serve in your parish? Hands up." Just like first grade. Me. And it was true. I understood that the primary relationship that I had in my life was the people that I was pastor of. And I did love them. My hand shot up because he asked, "Do you love them?" Absolutely. No question. Next question. How many of you tithe from your own income to the people you serve? Hands up. Uh-oh. My hand didn't go up. You know how many did? I remember it very clearly. 3 out of about 230. The guy said, "Gentlemen, that's where we begin. Your people won't go where you point, but they might go where you lead." Well, I had to stay for another hour and a half, but I was already transformed. About the most effective start of a speech I think I've ever seen. Because how did I get to be 35 and not understand that the best use of one's funds are to express one's deepest loves? I'd been raised in a family that did that all the time. They didn't talk about it. They just did it. Maybe they didn't talk about it and I didn't hear it. Anyhow, I went home, changed, and that day, I did what the guy said. He said, "Take a piece of paper, draw a line down the middle of it, and on the left-hand side, write the 10 most important things to you. The 10 most important people, the 10 most important ideas, the 10 most important things in your life. And on the right-hand side, figure out what you spend in a month and what you spend it on. And see if they match. Because Jesus told us, where your treasure is, there your heart will be. So find out where your treasure goes, then you'll find your heart." Well, I did that. And I thought, okay, now I get it. On Ash Wednesday, the reading that we were formed around on that day only 10 days ago, Jesus told us there's three principal ideas that are the way to the heart of the Father. And he called them, in this order, almsgiving, prayer, and fasting. This season focuses on these three practices, and it tries to get us into our own heart of hearts and it tries to help us be a unified whole. It helps us to be joyful people. That's the irony of all the hymns in a minor key and the smoke and the dark colors. It's not jubilant, but it's holy. It's work that bores into us and gets us right to our core. As a pastor, I've always hoped that I led by example, but I don't know that I've always been explicit enough, and today I want to be quite explicit. If you haven't done that practice, if you think that your faith family is one of the most important things in your life, and for me I know that it is, then is that reflected in the way that you give? We just had a finance council meeting yesterday, and one of the things we're trying to do is encourage more of you to give systematically by doing that online. Because then it's systematically built into your financial life, just like the mortgage, or the car payment, or the tuition payment, or the grocery bill. I've done that for years now, where I sit down and I make it the first thing that I do because it's the most important thing that I do. Sometimes you work your way back, you work down the list, and you find out the 10th most important thing is the one that's tough, the cable bill, the gym membership, the something, you know. So anyway, we're inviting students, even if you're just left home. There's nothing in Scripture that talks about wait until your ship comes in or you win the lottery or you get your student loans paid off. Forget about getting the student loans paid off. By the time that happens, you've got the mortgage and the car payment and the kids' braces. There'll always be a reason to put off what could be done right now. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there because I had taken a vow of poverty and I thought I was exempt. But somehow, that vow of poverty for me had to do with asceticism or giving something up. Instead of focusing me on loving the people that were right in front of me, how did I let that happen? I don't want that to happen to you or anybody I love. Anyway, today I'm sharing the preaching time with one of our students because it's Parents' Weekend, has been all weekend. And Megan is going to share a few ideas with us. I got the privilege of hearing her earlier today, so I know you're in for something good. Thanks, Megan.
Hi, my name is Megan, and I'm a senior here. And the Catholic community is a really special place, so I just wanted to share kind of my story and what it means to me. I come from a big Irish Catholic family. I went to Catholic elementary school, and I grew up going to Mass every week. Bottom line, I was what I considered a good Catholic. When I came to Stanford, I thought I didn't have any need to pursue my faith further. It had brought me this far, hadn't it? I went to Mass when it didn't conflict with my studies, and I think I went to the ice cream social welcome, but mostly just for the ice cream. I thought I had a relationship with God that was good enough, so I just went about my business. It wasn't long before the college environment got to me. I don't mean I suddenly became fed up, quite the opposite. I suddenly found myself drowning amidst the bad decisions I had made, and I knew I needed help getting back on my feet. My years of Catholic school training served me well then, because the first thing I did was talk to Father Nathan. I started going to church more regularly, and the summer after my freshman year marked an important deepening and strengthening of my faith. Sophomore year found me still making my way along this track closer and closer to God. I'd found the time for God and went to Mass semi-regularly, but I hadn't yet opened up to the people around me. It was actually my now boyfriend, then platonic male classmate, who was the first to invite me to come sit with him at Mass. We sat together, and I realized that I was surrounded by people who could help me grow in my faith by challenging me, supporting me, and guiding me. That winter, I attended my first ever Catholic special dinner, and I was hooked. Junior year, I began to realize that some of my closest friends were part of the Catholic community. I wasn't just another face in the crowd at Mass. When it was time for the sign of peace, I had plenty of friends to hug and wave at across the pews. The minute I allowed myself to open up and bring people from the Catholic community into my life, I found a new circle of friends that I could share my faith with. And this was a totally new concept for me. I was part of Esteem, and the discussions about deep subjects and interesting Catholic topics were completely foreign, but I loved them. Everything about the Catholic community was a highlight in my life at this point, never just another obligation. This year, I'm on the Catholic leadership team. I love being able to provide for others the community that was so integral in my growth and healing after freshman year. When I chose to seek a deeper relationship with God, I didn't realize that the entire community would come with him, but I couldn't have done it without them. Every year throughout my time at Stanford, I managed to take one step further into the community, and each step was greeted with the supportive people and spiritual community that I so yearned for. I can't imagine what my life would be like if I hadn't found the Catholic community, and I just wish I had 4 more years to spend here. Thanks.
Remember in that story of the Transfiguration, after talking to Moses and Elijah, they spoke about what was coming for Jesus, what was about to happen in Jerusalem. He's on his way there to give himself completely away to us because he loves us. And even though they're going to build the most awful instrument of death, the cross, he is going to set his face resolutely and move toward it out of love for us and give away the last drop of his blood. In the exchange that's about to happen, that's really the heart of it, that our giving is transformed into God's giving, and God feeds us and sends us out to transform the world. So my prayer for you the rest of this Lent is that the Spirit will guide you to those places in your life where there's already been people and events that have been transformative for you, and that the Lord might guide you deeper into your own heart of hearts.
Presentation of Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. Producer Father Isaiah Mary Milano, OB, Director Gary Glover, Associate Director Eun Soo, with music by Albert Tommaso and Shane Clarkson. For more information, please visit our website at catholic.stanford.edu or visit our offices on the third floor of Old Union. Till next time, God bless you.